today.
There is downstairs.
It is a Tachlin day. Okay. Oh yeah, Yudzayin, what is it? Yudzayin Ches. Oh, the name Lachrim. It's not so wild, not so. We held there a bottle. Okay.
What?
Go back to our discussion of Shemoneh Esrei, and I think we're up to the Bracha of Atah Kadosh, which we already discussed to some extent beforehand. I wanted to just mention one other theme within that. We mentioned before the approach of the Malbim and many others as well, the difference between Atah and Shimcha. Refer to Hashem himself, Kiviyahu, and then Atah. So that refers to the aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is totally unknowable, that's beyond the whole world. That the greatest Malach, by definition, any creation cannot fully know his creator. But Shimcha, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a name represents the way one describes something. So, etymologically, if you trace back, you know, what does table mean? So you'll see that table somehow is related to something having to do with a table. And we discussed that that's how Hashem, that's how Adam HaRishon named the animals. That he somehow was able to see the quality that each animal had, and he gave it an appropriate name. Names represent something about the qualities of the particular item that is being named. So too, when we speak about Hashem's name, which... although I don't have a specific source on this, but one could intuit that the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are infinite. We only know a small sample of, quote-unquote, the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramban writes that the whole Torah is the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you would divide up the letters of the Torah differently, they would spell out names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But by a name, the Malbim explains in his commentary on Asherah and elsewhere as well, and Soloveitchik Zatzal also in his Shiurim also developed the same idea. A name represents the way of Hashem, the way human beings perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't describe the essence of Hashem, but we could describe something about the way Hashem acts in the world. That's what we discussed when we were analyzing the fact that the Shemoneh Esrei is written both in the second person and in the third person. So on the one hand, we feel an intense connection to Hashem, on the other hand, we feel a distance to Hashem. So this bracha also highlights that idea, the fact that is we speak about Shimcha, about the name of Hashem, and the way in which Hashem relates to the world. And we also speak about Atah, the part of Hashem that's unknowable. The major theme of the bracha is Kedusha. And as many point out, the theme of Kedusha implies some kind of separation. So, within the sub-themes of Shemoneh Esrei, this is a bracha of who, meaning this is a bracha of the third person. This describes Hashem as unknowable. And here, as the bracha is indicating, that not only is the essence of Hashem unknowable, that's Atah Kadosh, but even the name of Hashem, Shimcha, is also Kadosh. What does that mean? You know, even the way and the complex formula with which Hashem intervenes in the world and connects himself to the world, that also, although we can give it names, we can call Hashem by the name Rachum, merciful, Chanun, compassionate, and we can refer to him as the Borei, as the creator, because these are all true in terms of the way he relates to the world, but on a deeper plane, even that's unknowable. We can't even know the shamus of Hashem properly. So even the names we refer to as Shimcha Kadosh.
Where are you basing Kadosh means unknowable? When we call the Jewish people Kadosh, we don't say it's unknowable.
Right, that's true. I'm taking it from the commentaries in the Siddur, but I think where they're coming from is that the term Kedusha, as we have in Parshas Kedoshim, implies separation. So how are we going to... what do we mean by the fact that Hashem is separate from the world? So I'm just giving one of many possible interpretations of that. The fact that he's separate from the world, meaning that those who inhabit the world the fact that he is separate cannot truly know him. But you're right, it is a jump. I'm not, it's not a direct
translation. Don't use the same word kadosh, the Jewish people
right.
are separate.
Right, because there that would mean that they are meant to be separate, whether to be separate from the animalistic possibility of man just being fully seeped in physicality. So in that sense, they're separate, whether it means that they should be separate from the nations. So when we say Hashem is separate from the world, so on a basic plane, of course, that he is not subject to any of the qualities and characteristics that the world has. But the way I think many of the commentaries specific in this bracha are indicating is that he's separate in the sense that even the Shimcha is Kadosh, meaning even the way in which he relates to the world is separate. So what does that mean? He relates to the world, that means he's connected. Kadosh means separate. So I thought the way some explain, I'm just saying somewhat from memory, but that even that aspect of Hashem's interrelationship with the world is also separate in the sense that it's not fully comprehensible by man. But the point's well taken, that Kadosh is certainly going to mean different things in different contexts. The bracha concludes with the phrase of Kedoshim b'chol yom yahalucha selah, that holy ones praise you every day. So, on a simple plane, and I don't remember where I saw this, but I believe it's from Rav Schwab, but if he doesn't say it here, he definitely says it elsewhere in the Birchas Kriya Shema. But and notes the following. Why is it necessary to say that in this bracha? Let's just say, Atah Kadosh Shemcha Kadosh. Why do you have to say, and holy ones praise you every day? So what Rav Schwab says is that, and this is always an interesting blend in the field in general, that on the one hand, they're means of communication with Hashem. On the other hand, they're also a reestablishment of fundamental truths that we're supposed to believe in. When one davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so one is supposed to come out of that experience having strengthened his beliefs in that which he holds to be true. Of course, there are parts of the davening that make that explicit, like Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which is basically statement of belief. But even when there's Shemona Esrei, which is not primarily a statement of belief, but included within the brachos of the Shemona Esrei are certainly reestablishments of truths that that we are meant to believe in and need in order for us to function as religious people in the world. So one basic example of that is by reciting Baruch Aleinu, we are reestablishing the fact that ultimately our sustenance comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not through our own efforts, and these are just tools within Hashem's hands in order to bring about that which is meant for us. That's a religious truth which is meant to be reestablished by the recital of that bracha. So too here in Atah Kadosh, I think it's Rav Schwab, if not others, suggests that the ending of Kedoshim B'chol Yom Yahalucha Selah is meant to highlight for us and reinforce how Kadosh Hashem is, because even the Kedoshim are Yahalucha Selah. So just to give an analogy, I don't know if you mentioned this before, we might have, because I'm getting faint bells here of deja vu. I don't know if it's from this session, my Stern class, or the Limud HaMalach. So but in any case, Kedoshim B'chol Yom Yahalucha Selah. So take for example, if Barry Bonds praises someone that you're a heavy hitter, right? So he's not going to give praise to someone who hits a home run every 50 games. You know, if a master chef says that, you know, this is pretty good, so that doesn't mean that, you know, you put together an omelet. If someone who is very talented in a certain quality praises someone as being talented, so that means at least they're equally as talented and usually even more, depending on the level of praise. So if we say Kedoshim B'chol Yom Yahalucha Selah, so that is meant to highlight the concept that even the most holy being in the world praises you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, daily. The thrust of that being that I use the term vaguely because it's a whole discussion of what these Kedoshim are, but we'll discuss that in a moment. That being is fully aware of the fact that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are even more Kadosh than they are. So now, who are these Kedoshim? So the different Mepharshim give different interpretations, but I don't see why here that's the Machlok. I think it's just complementary. Either refers to the Malachim, which I think is the most generally given interpretation. It would fit the best with this interpretation of the fact that even, again, I'm not familiar with the Malachim, but we know the Rambam and the Midrashim speak about different levels of Malachim. In the Davening, we speak about Malachim and Seraphim and Ofanim and Chayos HaKodesh. And then in sources they speak about the Malach Matatron, which is like the chief Malach. These are concepts we, as Rav Shuah points out so beautifully, he says, Nebuch, a person is blind, so you can't really describe a traffic light to them. You could approximate, you could try to do a dance, you can't describe color because you never saw color. So that's what he throws in every 10 pages in Shravan Prayer when he discusses these mystical concepts. It's a very important idea. Yeah, you can say the words, but you don't really understand fully what you're talking about. But we know that certainly as a matter of religious belief that they're very high level malachim, and together with their high level means they have extremely developed degrees of intellect, and without any Yetzihara clouding what's true. So when the high level malach praises the Kadosh Baruch Hu as Kadosh, so that's a reflection of what's true reality. So that's the thrust of this bracha. Now, in terms of some other interpretations, so some explain that Kadoshim refers to the Nishmos of the Tzaddikim, the souls of the righteous, who are in the next world, which also fits nicely with this pshat, because they're in the Olam HaEmes, so then they realize what's true. And others interpret that it refers to the Tzaddikim down below too, or to Klal Yisrael in general, that they praise your Kadosh Baruch Hu every day. Now, I don't remember where I saw this, but there's an interesting parallel that some give between this bracha, which mentions Kedusha three times. Ata Kadosh, Shishimcha Kadosh, U'Kedoshim V'chol Yom Yaluch HaSela, to the Volat Zion. Did we mention this before? The Volat Zion, the Kedusha? So we actually, the term Kedusha, which obviously related to this bracha as well, you know, the Kedusha that we recite B'tzibur, so we really recite Kedusha three times. And even though there's somewhat of a debate in this in the Rishonim, we assume that only one Kedusha has to be recited B'tzibur, and that's what we call Kedusha, and the Kadesh, Kadosh, etc. But the Psukim of Kedusha, namely Kadosh, 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 and Baruch Kavod, we actually recite three times in the Shachris. And on Shabbos, we spread it across Shachris and Mincha. Once is Kedusha and the Shemona Esrei. Once is what's called the Kedusha de Yotzer, of the first bracha of Kriya Shema, which we assume can be recited on an individual basis, even though there were some Rishonim who felt it can only be recited with Tzibur, and you would skip that whole section if you were davening privately. And then you have the Kedusha, what's called the Kedusha de Sidra, literally the Kedusha in order. I'm not exactly sure why that title is given, but that's from a Volat Zion. And on a simple plane, this is what the Avodram says, that before one leaves shul, so you want to make sure you get a little bit of learning. So some people actually sit down before they learn and learn in the Mishnah Yomi. I won't mention any names. But let's say someone's not sitting down for the Mishnah Yomi, and it's not a laning day. So he didn't necessarily get any learning in that day. And as the Shulchan Aruch writes, of course, one is supposed to set aside at least a short period of time, even if one has a totally booked day during the day and at night. So the Avodram explains that before we leave the davening, we recite some sukkim from Tanakh. And we don't suffice with that, because you might not know what those sukkim mean, so we give the Targum. Of course, you might not know what the Targum means. So the assumption is that the person is going to get the hint. You should know what it means. Of course, in those days, when Aramaic was the popular language, so that would be like the art school. So in the Levala Sion, in the regular sitter here, the page 65, but so at the end of the davening, has its own dynamic, which I don't know if we discussed it the first time around when we got to that, but there are really two sub-themes in this tefillah. There's the theme of Geula and the theme of Torah, right? And the first two psukim already highlight that. Well, the theme of Goel. And then Vanizos Brisi, which refers to the Bris of Torah. So now we give a sampling of Torah. Again, according to the Avodram, it's an opportunity to learn at least a little bit before you leave. So we say, V'ata Kadosh Yishev Tlot Yisrael, V'Korazel Zevi Amar, a reference to the Malachim that they call to each other, Kadosh, 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 Em Tzvokos Malachos Kavodo. And then we recite the Targum on that Pasuk, and then we recite Bruch Kavod, the Targum, and then Hashem Yimloch, and the Targum. Okay, so now. Parenthetically, within that theme of the fact that it's meant to be an aspect of Talmud Torah, so it fits nicely with some of the other themes in that Uval Tzion, where it says Baruch Elkeinu Shebaram Chvodo Zmanu Minatov Nosan Taras Emes Chayon Tzuchenu, very similar to the Baruch Satora. Okay, so now let's take a look at the Targum on that bracha of Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Right, keep in mind that in our bracha, Kadosh is mentioned three times. Ata Kadosh, Shemcha Kadosh, Kadoshim, B'chol Yom L'Chasela. Which is, at least, reminds us of Kadosh, 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 which is also mentioned three times. So now, rather than translating this phrase as holy, 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 which in Aramaic would be Kadish, 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 the Targum Yonasan, which is what we're about to read, which is the Aramaic translation of Navi, as opposed to the Targum Unklus, which was written by Unklus, which is on Chumash. So he translates each of these kedushos in a different way. U'mekablin dein min dein v'amrin, meaning the malachim receive from each other. Interesting that he doesn't translate it as call. He says, we receive from each other, and they say, Kaddish b'shmei meroma iloa b'shechinte. That Hashem is holy in the heavens. Shmei, right? Shmei meroma, Shamayim, Shamayim b'marom. Iloa, the upper heavens. B'shechinte, literally the house of his presence. Okay, so Kedusha number one is translated as the fact that Hashem is holy in the heavens. Now we have Kedusha number two. Kaddish al ara ovar gevurte, that Hashem is holy on the land, that which is the ma'aseh gevuroso, the act of his might. And then finally, kaddish la'olam l'olme olmaya, that he is holy forever and ever and ever. Who? Hashem tzavakos, as we saw before, mal yachol ara zivi korei, that the whole world is filled with the splendor of his glory. So one of the commentaries in the Siddur, I wish I can give credit, I just don't remember. I think it's in the Otzer Tfilos, but I don't remember further than that. Points out that that's exactly the way our bracha was structured. Because the recall, the way we interpreted earlier, Atah refers to Hashem's essence, which is unknowable. And of course, the analogy of that which is unknowable, even though it's a physical entity, is the sky. On a deeper plane, we speak about the spiritual heavens, which is totally inaccessible to mankind down below. Now I'm not talking about the Rebbes, you know, or whatever. The Rambam writes, you know, when they daven, you know, they flop off the goof and they float in the upper worlds. Is the Rambam like that also, not just the Chassidish Rebbes. But so okay, but then the normal human being is that world is totally inaccessible. So it highlights the inaccessibility or the unknowability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Atah, the You, the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is beyond our reach. Atah Kadosh, that's Shmei, directly parallel to that first translation of the first Kadosh in the Targum of Shmei Meroma. Then you have Shimcha Kadosh. Well, as we mentioned, Shimcha, the name of Hashem, represents the way we perceive Him as He interacts with the earth. So that's the second line, Kaddish Al Ara Ova Gevurte. And then the third line, which is La'olam Olme Olmaya, that Hashem is Kadosh forever. So here we have U'Kadoshim B'chol Yom Yahalucha Asela, that they praise you all the time. Why? Because you are Kadosh all the time. So interestingly, apparently that breakdown of those three Kadoshes, the three Kedushos, was a very ancient one, such that the Targum Yonasan uses it to translate the three Kadoshes of Yeshaya, and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, in formulating the Shemoneh Esrei, put at least allusions to those three themes within this bracha. Okay, just to end with a... this bracha, at least, may have one more minute to begin the next one, of it's an interesting Malbin on the Shiras Chana. Did we speak about this before? I'm sorry, I feel like I always have amnesia over here. But of course, Chana was childless at first, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and she miraculously has a child with the years of marriage, and recorded in the Tanakh are two tefillos that we have of hers. The first, which is extremely brief, at least the way it's recorded in Tanakh, even though it says she davened for a long time, but we only have one sentence of her tefilla, that she called out to Hashem and asked, if you give me a child, I will dedicate him to your service for his whole life. But what... even though the psukim say that she davened for a long time, but it doesn't really reveal to us more content than that. But what is revealed, rather at length, is her it's really more of a song rather than a tefillah, even though it's called tefillah, which the Mefarshim tried to explain why it's called tefillah, if it's not really a request or anything. But where she praises God after she has Shmuel and, if you will, returns him to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and puts him under the charge of Eli at a very young age, whatever, 2, 3 or so on and so forth. Is there a Chumash? I'll get one. I know it's one of those Shira-oriented parshiyos, but... Rosh Hashanah has the...
It is.
You're right. Thank you. So, it's actually a very long Haftorah. It's Perek Aleph and Perek Beis, because Perek Aleph is the original story, Perek Beis is the Shira. Even better. So let's see that commentary idea. Thank you. So, I happen to be a big fan of Malbim, which you probably have seen throughout the years. So here the Malbim says something very, very fascinating. In the Tfilas Chana, she states as follows. This is actually the second pasuk. Ein kadosh kashem, ki ein biltecha, Ein sur kelokeinu. I could have taken from a sitter too, because many recite this before the Ein kelokeinu. So Chana begins by saying, "Alatzli bi b'Hashem, rana kani b'Hashem, rachav pi al oivoi," that I've been catapulted over my enemies who have constantly tortured me, which is probably a reference to Penina, who had constantly teased her for not having a child. And then she says, "Ein kadosh k'Hashem ki ein biltecha." There's no one as holy as God because there's no one besides you. V'ein sur kelokeinu, and there's no rock like our God. So the Malbim interprets this whole song of Chana in a highly philosophical way. That Chana, using the opportunity of her having a child, was praising Hashem as being involved in the world. And then the various psukim describing how there are those who would say that God has abandoned the world, or even worse, doesn't exist, and things happen just by mere chance and just happenstance. And then she describes how, but you see, even the world, that can't be, because somehow mysteriously, poor people suddenly get rich, rich people suddenly get poor, and then in a reference to her story, people with children sometimes lose their children, Chalila, and without children, barren women suddenly have children. So she answers the question as to why is that? Because it's Hashem Meimis U'Machaya, and it's Hashem Morish U'Mashir, so on and so forth. And then actually preceding, or maybe just borrowing from, there's a question exactly who was the original author of the Hallel. It probably was not David. It probably preceded David by many years. He just recorded it in Tehillim. But this is one of the earliest sources of that pasuk of make him me offer dol. Of course, in the Hallel we have mekimi me offer dol, me ashbos yirim evyon loshivi and lehoshiv in the divim, so on and so forth. So the Malbim writes, in light of his approach to this song, that Chana is speaking about the fact that Hashem is involved in the world, that he's mashkiach. So Chana is addressing a very ancient question that was already raised by the Greek philosophers, and according to the Malbim's approach, was already existent in her days. How could that be? How could Hashem be involved in the world? But he's so distant from the world. He's so unknowable. I'm not a bucky in the works of Aristotle, and anything that I know from Aristotle I only got from the Moreh Nevuchim or other works that quote him. I never read it in the original, so maybe others are more knowledgeable of it. But from what I've read, Aristotle was of this opinion exactly, this kasha, that yes, God somehow, I can't use the word creation because Aristotle didn't believe in creation, he believed in the world always being there. but eternal universe, unlike Plato. Plato believes in creation. Aristotle didn't. He believed in a god. So he viewed the world as kind of like a shadow, like a reflection of him, something like that. I don't know how to say the words. I don't have to. But he didn't believe in Hashgacha. He didn't believe in divine providence. The way the Rambam puts it in the Mora is the Rambam states that God's providence, quote unquote, only extends to the lunar sphere. In other words, to the upper world, because that's his chever. That's where he that's the world of perfection, and that's where God resides. But in the lower sphere, the world of change, the world of mankind, it has nothing to do with that. That's just totally due to the devices of man. And that's where the Rambam spends a lot of time in the Mora, of course, combating a very common sinkhole of many Jews who are studying philosophy and felt that Aristotle succeeded in proving his case, and through that denied divine providence. So he tried to show how, when you go through the logical steps carefully, you'll see that there's no contradiction between a God who's a creator, which is something Aristotle also denied, and who was involved in the world, and philosophical truth. This is, again, I don't know how much it bothers people in the current setting, but this is something that certainly in the not-too-distant past was something that was constantly discussed. So the Malden suggests that philosophical problem, on a simple plane, how could Hashem be involved in the world if he's so holy and so unknowable and so lofty, so was solved by Chana in this pasuk. It's a very interesting shot, he says. Ein kadosh kashem. There's no one as holy as God. In other words, what does holiness normally imply? So, let's just give a down-to-earth example. We think of a mystic. So what does a mystic do? What do? You know, they're holy, so they're separate from the world. So what do? So again, I'm not talking about practically what a standard mekubal does, but what's like the stereotypical view of a mystic? So he gets up in the morning, I don't know, goes to the mikveh 30 times, learns all day, says tilim all day, and has nothing to do with anybody. Because after all, if he would deal with people, that's going to bring him down. Again, that's not practically the way our tzaddikim act, but one would expect that that's the way it would have to be. And once in a long time, l'havdil, he'll have to go to Dalai Lama, you know, up there in the mountain, you know, not having too much to do with anybody, because you don't want to be tainted. And then occasionally, you know, once in a while, you'll lower yourself to deal with people. A kadosh, normally, we view as someone who's separate, and therefore doesn't really deal with the world. So too, in a certain plane, that's exactly the philosophical problem with Hashgacha that Aristotle had. He's so lofty, so kadosh, how could it have anything to do with the world? So says the Malbim, but wait a second. Ein kadosh kashem. There's no one as holy as God. What does that mean? Thank you. What does that mean? That means that not only is Hashem's holiness different in degree, but it's different in quality. And how so? Because somehow, by the time we're done, we have to get to a point where Hashem's Kedusha is not a contradiction to the fact that He's involved in the world. So the Malbim quotes the famous Rambam, which is ultimately based on earlier sources and was elaborated upon even more so by the Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhin. So what's the most basic definition of God? Or to use the Hebrew term, Havaya. The term Havaya, Yudkei Vavkei, means existence. So what does that mean? That means that it is a logical contradiction for anything to exist without God. Because only God is existence. And that's where the Rambam explains that if you could imagine for a moment a world without a God, then there would not be anything else in the world. But if you would imagine for a moment no world, there would still be God. So the direct corollary of that is that unlike the intuitive approach, which is that Hashem created the world, okay, and then He's involved in the world. It's not that way. It's mechadesh betuvo v'chol yom tamed ma'asei bereishis. By definition, the world is constantly being renewed. Why? Because on a fundamental plane, true reality, if you will, there would be nothing except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that means, by definition, that clock on the wall, and this hand, and this mouth that's speaking, and this Tanakh, all of the molecules in there have to constantly be renewed by their creator, because otherwise, by definition, they can't exist, because only existence is a Hashem Yisbarach. That's Havaya. Yudkei Vavkei, Hoya Hoviyya. He is, to invent the term, he is existor. Right? Creator, existor. He causes things to exist. So if that's the case, then by definition, Hashem is involved in the world. Because what is the relationship of a Kadosh Baruch Hu with the world? Not just creator. It's existor, meaning he constantly recreates it. So, and that's what, a little of what we mean by Hashem's Kedusha. When we speak about Hashem being different and separate and unique and not like anyone else, because no one else has that quality. If I write a musical piece, so it's Mozart's pieces are being played hundreds of years after his death. An architect who builds a building, the building is around 1,000 years sometimes after. The Egyptian pyramids are still around, even though the original builders and architects are dead and buried, because they're not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu that needs to constantly recreate in order for it to exist. So therefore, Chana is saying, Ein Kadosh Kashem, there's nothing like the holiness of God, meaning normally holiness would imply separation and lack of involvement in
the
physical world or with other people, other items. But your Kedusha, ki ein biltecha. Your Kedusha is such, it's on a totally different plane because there's nothing besides you. So your Kedusha, by definition, means that you have to be involved in the world. So that's what Chana is using as a, according to the Malbim at least. And even if it's not Chana's words, but certainly it's a true idea, but it seems to fit very nicely in this pasuk, ki ein biltecha, that the Kedusha of Hashem is on a totally different plane than the Kedusha of other beings. So getting back to the bracha, so here we have a bracha of Kedusha, highlights the fact that it's not only Ata Kadosh, but it's also Shimcha Kadosh, and shame, meaning shame, your involvement in the world, the fact that you're Kaddish Al Ara. So here, I added to this Malbim, and I think it's an important concept. Soloveitchik always develops this a lot, the concept of Ahlach to Bedrochov. You have to walk in the ways of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's what they call in philosophy, in Matati Odei, you know, to copy Hashem Yisbarach. So how could you copy this quality of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha? So that's what we see. So you, obviously on a fundamental plane, you can't. But to the extent that our Torah always teaches us that one cannot totally separate themselves from human beings in order to achieve perhaps a higher level of devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we have always stressed the fact that there are three amudim. There's Torah, Avodah, and Gemilat Chasadim, and that of course to excel in Torah and Avodah, isolation normally would allow for a greater development than that, but one can never forget about the amud of Gemilat Chasadim. And even though each individual blends those two in different ways, Yitzchak Avinu was not the Makarev of people that Avraham Avinu was. He was more, as many developed, he was the Midas HaGvura, he was more of a self-developer. But nonetheless, he still had dealings with the world. He had to deal with the Plishtim, he had to deal with his children, so on and so forth. Avraham Avinu, though, he had a different dose, where there's even a famous Chassam Sofer where it points out that even though Avraham Avinu, based on his total involvement in the world, didn't necessarily have, Chassam Sofer didn't say it, they wouldn't be able to say it, but said didn't necessarily have the ability to develop his prophetic qualities, a lot of which is necessary in terms of to be misbode, to be separate from the world. So it says in Parashat Vayera that Hashem tells Avram before he's about to, he actually speaks to himself, so to speak, before he reveals to Avram the fact that he's about to destroy Sodom. So the pasuk says, Hamachas ani me'Avram. Will I conceal from Avraham Avinu that which I'm about to do? So says the Chassam Sofer, implying that there would be a reason to, yes, conceal it from him. So on a simple plane, I don't know what simple plane is, but the Chassam Sofer suggests that on a certain level, it could be that Avraham Avinu was not on the level of having Nevuah at this point. But that's what he says, but I can't withhold Nevuah from him, because after all, why isn't he necessarily on the level of having Nevuah? Because it's, as I don't have it inside, but Laman Yitzaves as Bonav and Eves Lasos Derech Hashem, which is the Derech HaChesed. So Avraham Avinu was given a gift of Nevuah beyond the quote-unquote natural course of events because he engaged in Chesed. This is a quote, a story, I was reading something just on the internet. There was a Mekubal, his name is Rav Leon in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so someone was writing about his experiences with him. So when he was a young boy, so besides learning Shas, he used to sneak all the Kabbalah safe Svarim of his father off the shelves, and he used to study them. Because he knew his father wouldn't let, so he used to study them. Then his father caught on, so he trained him in Kabbalah. And then, after he became a very great scholar, both in Niglin and Ister, so he says, it's very easy to be a malach. Now go out and help people. So, which is exactly what he does now, besides, you know, his learning and etc. And his bodidus. But he has hours, whatever, each day, each week, where he tries to help people and give them brachos and so on and so forth, advice and help them do tshuva. It's the same idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kadosh, but nonetheless, that's just by definition. That's not a steer that's involved in the world. So we, by copying Hashem Yisbarach, also have to try to emulate that, to somehow try to blend, and each person does it in different ways, to blend what a necessary separation in order to develop ourselves, but nonetheless, not to remain totally isolated as to deny the third amud of Dinot HaKadosh. Thank you.